If you enjoyed podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Nurse Wellness Podcast, hosted by Wendy Garvin Mayo, focuses on the power of stress management and how it's foundational to being your best, doing your best, and giving your best. There's a wonderful episode that you should check out called Letting Go, where Wendy Garvin Mayo shares 6 strategies to release control and manage stress effectively. Check out Nurse Wellness Podcast on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to Iowa to Health. I'm Jeremy Quinby. This is episode 110 of the podcast. If you're new to the show, I want to welcome you. Iowa to Health is your place for trusted health guidance and resource. Whether you're looking to improve your health or just seeking ways to stay well, we're here for you. This growing community is on a mission to improve our state of being and experience together on the planet. So excited to bring you my first episode of this new season with Dr. Tammy Chang. It seems like in some way we're all going through a kind of reset, or at least building new foundations. So I was excited when I read Tammy's recent book on boundaries. It was written in relation to the boundaries she struggled with as a physician, mother, wife, and daughter, and the many challenges that start to take over in what I refer to as the sandwich years, when you become a parent and have the responsibilities of them and also taking care of aging parents and also in the thick of the busiest time in your career. With all this on her plate and more, she found herself overwhelmed and looking for a way out and came close to becoming another statistic. Physicians have, in the last decade, become the most likely members of American society to take their own lives. And we know that this is only getting worse over the past 2 years with the pandemic. She shares her story here and how she has devoted herself to try to help others in healthcare, especially women, learn something that wasn't covered in med school, how to create healthy boundaries. I really connected to this because it's something that I've worked at in my own life and career, and because of the ways she breaks it down into some very simple strategies that can help free us of constraints that may be limiting our ability to enjoy our lives. Please enjoy my conversation with Dr. Tammy Chang. I'm really excited about this topic, and that's, you know, part of the reason why your, you know, in particular, your challenge really struck me, because that's one of the things I wanted to get into and talk. It's come up a number of times on the podcast, actually, what's going on with physicians, especially over the last 2 years. So I thought that would be, you know, something that we should really learn more about, and more specifically women. So if you'd be willing to share maybe a little bit of your story, because I think that's kind of your starting point. That was the tipping point for you.
This for a lot of people. So, I mean, I'm a pediatric oncologist, and really everything has come out of a period of time a little under 3 years ago. So about a year before the pandemic, when I hit rock bottom, not unlike a lot of physicians. And I was only 5 years out of training, so I'm still on the youngish side, you know, for medicine. We hope to have a long career. You know, it takes forever to get here. And then it is tough when we get there too after training. And so, so I burned out very severely. I'm very open about it and intentionally. So I was suicidal. And I took a leave of absence. I got a lot of help, thankfully. And I discovered coaching along the way. And that's actually why I became a coach and went through 5 coaching certifications, because I'm, you know, not unlike a lot of other people who are drawn to this field, I'm a lifelong learner. And it helped me so much that I'm like, how, what can I do to help others? Yeah. And so that time really has become the driving force for everything I do now. So, you know, I've written this book. I do all this work outside of work. I'm still a practicing pediatric oncologist. I'm actually also the medical director of provider wellness for my large healthcare system.
Yeah.
This is the work I do every day.
So what was the lead up? What did it look like before you hit that rock bottom place? You had gone through medical school residency, and where were you at in your career, and what did that whole thing look like?
Yeah, so I was 38 almost 38. So yeah. I finished training when I was 34. I went straight through. It takes that long. So yeah. I did four. I was in the 8-year medical program at Brown. I went through 4 years of residency training. I did a combined internal medicine and pediatrics because I love adults and I love kids. You know, I love everyone.
I'm me too.
Yeah, it sounds like you did the babies and all different ages. So I mean, I love that. I actually really miss treating grandparents. That's like one of my favorites. Too. But I don't get to do that much anymore. And then I did pediatric oncology. I was at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital for 3 years for my fellowship. That was my first job out of fellowship too. I was a solid tumor doctor.
That's an intense one to start with.
Yeah. For solid tumor, you mean?
Yeah. And in pediatrics.
Yeah. Pediatric oncology. So that's I'm hematology oncology.
Okay.
But my love is oncology, and that's why I was drawn to that field. And so it's already in itself a very intense and emotionally challenging field. I think those of us who are drawn to, and I could talk about that for a whole hour, but I mean, those of us who are drawn to that are, it's truly a calling. You know, I don't think people go into that because they think it's going to be fun.
I mean,
we think it's fun, there's a lot of difficulty and trauma, like in your work that you shared. I mean, you've done a lot with people who have struggled.
Even with new parents, you know, I mean, anytime you're working with, you know, newborns or, you know, small kids who are just really struggling, You're really treating a whole family. You're treating a whole ecosystem because of what it does to all their lives.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's not just the patient, right? It's the whole family.
Right.
It's right. And I mean, I think that's actually the part I love the most, is that it's not that I don't just love the patient, but it's actually so complex caring for the whole family.
Right.
And everyone needs something just a little different. So, I mean, I love that. I was deeply, and I still love it. I mean, I still get to do it. But it's easy to become very lost in that world.
Yeah.
I was 5 years out of training, and we were just at a time. And I actually liken that time, not unlike to what people are experiencing in healthcare today, which is we were short-staffed for a prolonged period of time.
Yeah.
There was a lot of trauma in our group.
Yeah.
Actually, my colleague's daughter died. I mean, young daughter. From cancer. I had another colleague get cancer. We had multiple members of our staff going through cancer treatment themselves. Yeah. We also had their family members getting diagnosed with like end-stage metastatic cancer. It was like kind of it was all too much all at the same time.
Yeah.
There was a lot of loss and trauma for us personally. And then we actually I'm outside Seattle and our area is just booming. And so I think the population just boomed all at the same time. And we were having record numbers of new cancer diagnoses in children in our area. We were having record numbers of relapses and deaths of our patients.
Wow.
So it was a very traumatic time.
Yeah,
I mean, at baseline. And I think, you know, the reason why I'm so passionate about this concept of boundaries, especially for women, but I think honestly for all healthcare providers, is like, I took it all on. Like it was my responsibility to keep everything going. And that completely caught up with me.
And how were you able to identify then when you personally with that you were at a low point? I mean, was it suicidal ideation or? Yeah.
Yeah. I started dreaming about, it was probably about 6 months in. I mean, I was on call. I don't know. I was taking more call and sleeping less than I ever had as a trainee.
Right. Yeah.
And so I was already completely not okay.
Yeah.
But it was, I mean, I started dreaming about anything I could do to get out of it, which essentially meant like, how could I end up in a coma? Could I jump off? Could I drive my car off something? Can I take some drugs so I can just sleep forever? I mean, those were the kinds of, and I was actively thinking about what I could do.
Yeah.
And I clearly, thankfully recognized that was disordered and not okay.
Yeah. I mean, oddly enough, my practice is about 25% health professionals.
Oh, wow.
And it's gone up a little bit probably, you know, during the pandemic because I'm treating more therapists. I'm treating people who are, you know, working in ER and urgent care, who are, you know, dealing with all sorts of COVID related things or not, and just already overworked, like, you know, and underslept. And self-care is out the window and all those things. It's just one of those things that starts to mount. And you mentioned that the documentary, Do No Harm, in your book.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think it was an important one, and it was before the pandemic that came out, correct?
It was, I think a year before.
Yeah. So we were already at a crisis point then. And so it's one of those, it's part of the reason I wanted to address this. I'd like to look at the more specifically what happens with women physicians too. So you know, because you had some stuff in there too about, you know, and compared to the regular population that you know, female physicians or women who are physicians are you know, their risk of suicide is like 400% that of the general population.
Yeah, 250 to 400% higher than that of women in the general population.
Yeah. And we already know now that physicians are the highest suicide rate profession.
Of any profession.
Yeah. So it's one of those things, and part of my, I have a very close friend who's a physician who's mm-hmm. younger, and he, you know, there was a moment where he was starting to talk about, you know, wanting to quit his profession, mm-hmm. you know, which is after going through so many different things, he ended up shifting fields, which was which was the right thing to do. But it took 5 years, you know, to sort of slowly transition to those places. And that can feel in those low moments, like it's just completely daunting that you can't do that kind of thing. And you've got the mounting school loans and all these different things. Yeah. And I really think it's one of those things that we need to be a little bit more aware of. I think in the past, we've sort of thought of you know, physicians as being these big breadwinners in our communities, not knowing that it's one of those things that sort of slowly builds up in your career. But it takes a while to get to a point where you're actually earning after having to pay off your school loans.
That too. True.
And also, you know, starting to raise a family at a point where, you know, most of the time you get through residency and finally get into your job. And then all of a sudden you're spending a lot of money on childcare. You know, it's like there's a whole bunch of, you know, pieces through your 30s even that are very difficult for physicians.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think it's amplified for women because that's their prime childbearing years, right? And so, and I tried it. I think that we have to start with the data because that is not, I mean, it's like, it's not interpreted. Like it's actual data. And I think that's important because we know that 40% of women physicians are either cutting back or quitting within right. 6 years of finishing training. I mean, so, and that isn't all that surprising given the pressures and the strain and the phase of life, right? And most are trying to start families or have young children.
Right. And you know, and I would say that women are in many ways more equipped for the emotional stuff that comes up in the workplace with care. And we need more women in you know, as physicians and in healthcare. I think it's really important. So that part, you know, seems really critical to like really think about what we can do to support them.
Yeah. And I mean, I actually think of it both ways because it's about supporting parents. You know, my passion is about women and I'm a woman and a lot of my friends are women. But I mean, I it's the same for the men or other genders, right, who are also parents and caregivers. Yeah. I want the support for everyone, you know, because men are quitting medicine too.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
like your friend struggled and many are looking for a way out.
Yeah.
That's the reality of what's happening today.
So what made you think about, you know, switching into this kind of more of a consulting role? Did you go through kind of a process yourself to really, you know, reassess and because what we're going to get into here is kind of talking about boundaries. And I think it's an important conversation. This is not just for medical people. This is something that everybody struggles with on some level.
Yeah. I think every human being does.
Right.
We're all human beings. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think I shared everything came out of that difficult time and I discovered coaching and I started going through coach certification, actually not even intending to become a coach. Yeah.
Was it health coaching or was it, what kind of certification was it?
It's through a collective training institute. So it's one of the oldest professional coaching schools in the country. So it's been around since the 80s. And it's both life, executive, and leadership coaching.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
So it's kind of, I think people can choose what they want to do with it. It's kind of the foundational core principles of coaching as a field, I guess. It's only been around for about 50 years, but it's a wonderful skill and a tool to help others.
Yeah.
And there actually have been a couple studies now in physicians specifically. It's been around in like business and finance for 40, 50 years, but it's only just finally you're probably quite familiar, but just making its way into healthcare since 2018.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take a lot to dramatically reduce burnout and increase satisfaction and quality of life. I mean, it's 30 minutes a month for 6 months is the study that's been published.
Didn't you take off some time when you hit that low point and was this kind of what you discovered that helped you?
It did. I actually not only had went through a lot of therapy, but I actually reconnected with old friends. I don't know if you saw my stuff that I co-founded a platform with my medical school classmates.
Yeah, I did.
CodeMD.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a huge part of my life.
Yeah. What is that called again?
PINC CodeMD.
PINC CodeMD. That's right.
Yeah. So it's to really support women physicians.
Yeah.
And to help them thrive. And what we want is to help them remain in medicine and not quit, to actually thrive in their careers.
Yeah.
So through that, I reconnected with my friend, and she had also struggled. This is why we came together and we were on fire to do something. We didn't know what, right? And she had worked with a coach. And so then I started working with her coach. Okay. And that's kind of where it all started.
Okay. And so tell me about that. What does that process look like when you guys help somebody else here?
Through PINC Code?
Through PINC Code, yeah.
Yeah, it's actually, we have year-long programs for women physicians. So there's actually been a lot of evidence and studies done showing specific pillars are actually really important key pieces of helping women specifically thrive as physicians. So that includes like leadership and personal development. We have parenting support for courses and classes and workshops.
Yeah.
We also have self-compassion and mindful self-compassion classes that we offer, because that's been dramatically shown to improve the quality of life for healthcare providers. We also do everything we do is about peer connection at its core and peer support. We also provide coaching, one-on-one group coaching. So we kind of we essentially want it to be everything that we wish we had when we were struggling.
Yeah.
And that we just couldn't find. We ended up finding all these things ourselves. Like everything that we have on our platform is something that Louisa or I have actually personally experienced or gone through or someone we worked with ourselves. So we know it helps, and we want it just to be available, so it's easy for others to find, because it can be overwhelming to go online and Google. I mean, we were Googling help for women physicians. We didn't know where to start. Right.
Yeah.
And that is honestly the case for a lot of others too.
Yeah. One of the things I thought was interesting too, is Louisa also, does she come from an immigrant family?
She does.
One of the things I couldn't help but sort of, ruminate about is why health professionals have such trouble with boundaries when it comes to care, right? I mean, it's
strong and true.
And you kind of brought in your story about, being first generation and some of the guilt and some of the responsibility you felt. I was an only child, of a single parent. And so I had some of those same things. I'm sure they kind of came, through doing some therapy and a lot of work going through my life. I'm a little older than you, but I kind of went through a lot of those things too and tried to figure out at what point did I kind of lose that boundary? And so I'd love to hear your take on that.
Oh, I mean, of course, we all speak through our own personal experience, so it's my bias and my lens, right?
Right.
I'm
curious about your lens.
Oh, yeah, no problem. I'm very open about it. I think I had no boundaries, essentially, until I hit rock bottom and had to rebuild my life. I didn't know what boundaries were. And this is something I actually share very openly when I go educating other women physicians about boundaries, because the concept didn't exist till the 1980s. The first book on it really wasn't until Townsend and Cloud, which was early 1990s.
Yeah.
And I didn't even read that book until I was, I think, close to finishing my fellowship. I hadn't heard of it. So I'd never even heard of this concept. And so, I mean, honestly, through my whole life, and I mean, I have the most wonderful parents, but they don't know what these things are. They don't know what boundaries are either. It's like, if the things are hard, just work hard. Don't complain.
It wasn't taught, right? And I grew up in Catholic family, you're supposed to sort of sacrifice and do, if you think about yourself, that's kind of like, the complete wrong thing to think about, right? So it's a sin maybe, but I'm not even sure anymore. but it becomes ingrained in the culture that you grew up in.
I think that's the case. Gosh, in so many backgrounds and cultures, and regardless of where our parents are from or where we grew up, I think it is a piece. And what I'm so grateful for is that I think with each successive generation, I hope we can just impart a little bit more of this and model it for them. I mean, that's actually a big part of why I do all this work, is I want to empower others, my peers and my colleagues, and I mean, all of us right now, because a lot of us are parents and we have children and they're watching us. They pick up on stuff even if we're not seeing anything. They watch our behavior and how we respond to things. Yeah. And so I think it's so important for us not only to model it for ourselves, like taking care of our own health, what does well-being look like for each other, taking care of each other in our own families, but like for our kids, you know, because they're learning from us.
Yeah. This was really the reason for me starting the podcast in the first place was to explore this whole idea of what well-being is. Or, you know, I started out kind of calling it health. What is health? But it's it really gets, it goes beyond that, because this is not about health care. It's not always, you know, when we think of health, we think of food and exercise and health care. And it's important to have good access to all these kinds of things. But what keeps us well really is a whole bunch of other things that we wouldn't even consider to be part of the health equation necessarily. But that's why I like to, you know, really call it well-being now more, is that I think that is that well-being is what bolsters our health.
Oh, I agree. And
And boundaries. Yeah. So that's why I was interested in your book.
No, thank you. And I mean, I love your podcast. I was checking out your stuff earlier. I was like, oh, this is awesome.
Oh, thanks.
Well, I also love the word well-being even more than wellness. And maybe it's my own bias, but when I hear wellness, I'm like, I should be exercising and eating healthily and doing meditation and deep breathing. But it's not like about all the other, you know, broad. I mean, well-being is such a deep and broad concept. Yeah. And there's so much that goes into that, right, for every single person.
Yeah. So take me through boundaries a little bit. I'm curious to hear how you kind of start out this process when you're talking to people and the kind of steps that you go through to help them identify.
Oh, for sure. And I'm not a psychotherapist. You know, I'm not a therapist. I'm not a psychiatrist. And so I come to it from a lay person's perspective. But I actually think that's sometimes helpful because it's very relatable. And I make it very practical because I think women physicians, which is really who I work with most, but I think this is the same for women. I think it's the same for a lot of men. I think it's the same for a lot of professions. So it's not specific to women physicians, but, you know, it's this concept is not a comfortable one for most people. It's kind of uncomfortable, just like that guilt, right? Like when we were kids, we're not supposed to say no, we're not supposed to complain, just put your head down and just keep working. You know, and that's a, you know, it's and then that becomes ingrained after decades, right? And it's so hard to change that behavior, and it feels really yucky and really bad when we try to push up against it and to change. However, it's, I think, the key to us living more fulfilling and meaningful lives.
Yeah,
and feeling free of all these things.
Yeah. As you said, it's what gives you freedom, right?
Yeah.
So. What kind of boundaries do you see people in need of changing, or identifying for themselves in your line of work at least?
Oh, for sure. I think actually what is kind of a different concept for some people when I start to talk about it is I actually say boundaries have to start from us, and they have to come from within, from the inside out.
Yeah.
And it really, unless we have a really strong sense of, you know, what our core values are, what our non-negotiables are, what's really most important to us as human beings, and it's going to be individual for every single person, you, me, that it's hard to set boundaries because there's always going to be demands on our time or energy or attention.
Yeah.
And it's usually from something external, right? Or another, it usually involves another person. Or something related to another person. And so I actually start with, and I do this in the book, I spend most of the time, and when I do this with clients and I talk about it with other women physicians, I slow it down and we just really focus on themselves.
Yeah.
You know, really basic, breaking it down. Who are you? What is your why, with a capital W, like Simon Sinek defines it? What is your purpose? What is your impact? What are your core values? What are your non-negotiables? What's your GPS, your compass? And then we break it down into this whole, I sort of touch on the key areas that I think make a big difference, at least for my population, because I'm one of them. And so this is like what I needed to hear essentially, you know, three years ago. And so, I mean, there's a huge inner critic. You hear about imposter syndrome or that saboteur.
Yeah.
We've all got the gremlin, right?
For sure.
The nagging, whatever. Every single human being has it. And I think it's been a strong survival. It's been developed out of survival, right? I think there's actually a purpose and a reason for it, why we've developed this part of ourselves. But it really can hold us back.
As you said, the responding instead of reacting, right?
Yeah. And we don't learn that, at least, interestingly, us in medicine, you'd think we'd learn something of this, and we don't. I don't know. Yeah. So, I mean, I wish I'd learned this years ago.
Yeah.
And so recognizing, I also bring a little bit of cognitive behavioral therapy, just the basics, like 101, because that my audience is familiar with. And I'm like, okay, remember in, you know, freshman year of college when you took psych 101 and this is what we learned, and you've got a trigger, external trigger, you've got, then you develop a thought, which then drives an emotion. And that happens like in a split second. Then once you're in an emotion, then you start, you know, it drives the behavior and your physical reactions, et cetera. And then it's just like the cycle, right? And so if we can slow it down at that very beginning, that's where the power is. And so I spend a lot of time helping people to identify those voices or phrases they say, because we all have them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what,
can you take me through? I'm just curious, since you're willing to share your what you identified in terms of your inner critic and your why.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I think my inner critic, I named her Nagging Nelly. She's a little bit, sounds like a little bit like my mom. It's okay. My mom knows this. She's like, right. I know. All I did was nag you as kids, but it was because I love you. And I'm like, I know.
And it probably sounds like her mom and
it does sound
her
a little
father
bit like her mom. Mostly her mom, I think.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, so mine was mostly like, work. You're not working hard enough. You could do better.
Yeah.
Why did you do that? Oh, that's so embarrassing. I mean, it was like, you're not good enough. It was essentially, you're not good enough. You're not doing a good enough. You're not working hard enough. You're not doing a good enough job. You could do better.
Yeah.
And that, I share that in the book too. I that's been a constant companion since I was a little kid. So,
and
for a lot of others.
And in the, you know, with our Psych 101, we know then if we can kind of, you know, identify that when it comes up, it's like there's Nagging Nelly again, right?
Yeah, I mean, one of the effective tactics is to actually visualize Nagging Nelly as like, I actually have people draw it like a cartoon and then put like little bubbles, right? Because then it seems a little comical, like, oh, that's kind of ridiculous. Why am I listening to that thing, that cartoon? Right? So, because it all feels like ourselves. It feels like our own ourselves talking to ourselves, but it really is, it's a part of ourselves. It doesn't have to be us, right? So. Yeah.
And then your why, and the why is kind of more like the heroic you, right? It's like the thing that's more important than you.
Yeah, I think of it also very much aligning with our inner leader rather than our inner critic.
Mm,
And our greater purpose in life. And so I walk through that with others, but my why essentially, and I'm very open about it, is to empower others to just be their most bold, authentic, and to me, joy is my top core value. So I want them, you know, I'm biased and I say, I want you to have the most joyful life for you. And then by doing that, I know you will inspire other people.
Yeah.
And that's what I care about most. So that's my why. And that's what drives me to everything I do.
Yeah. And it's, when I identified very early in my career that energy was everything, like, anything that basically played against that, whether it's the inner critic, whether it's a lifestyle issue or, you know, saying yes to too much, because you talk about this in the book a little bit too, this is all part of boundary setting, right? So, you know, it's one of those things that I've tried to be really, I mean, as I'm going along, I also had a business at one point that was, you know, took a lot of my energy while I was also practicing. And so, you know, with my business partners being like setting boundaries with them, like I don't want emails, especially really, you know, emotion driven emails after 6 o'clock, you know, I don't want to take that. I don't want to carry that into my evening or whatever the number is for you. Right. I mean, I think those are the kinds of things that we need to be able to do better. And this doesn't necessarily just relate to physicians, but I think, you know, the more emotionally demanding your work is, the more space you probably need also for that recovery process so that we keep some of that energy, you know, that we can, so we can, you know, be our best selves.
Oh, for sure. I think it doesn't matter what field we're in. I mean, we all need that. We need time to recharge.
Yeah.
And we're lucky enough to be able to do that for ourselves. I mean, have I learned that the hard way? You know, I actually joke, I don't mind sharing. I joke because I've been the medical director of provider wellness now since the spring. And I'm very laughingly tell everyone, and I'm pretty burned out by wellness right now. So I'm struggling. Yeah. I'm working on this. I'm working on it too. I'm human. I'm a human. I fail every day at this. And I keep trying because I want to get better at it. It doesn't come naturally to me because it didn't for so many years.
Right.
And I'm still learning, even though I'm so passionate about it, but I struggle to model that behavior that I know I want for others. And so it's actually the biggest thing I work on now every day, which is how do I model this for others?
It's important to hear someone else say that too. I think to know that it's going to take us some time if we've been bad at something for a while, to just give yourself some years to kind of learn that whole process.
Yeah, I think it's just giving ourselves some grace. Like,
yeah,
give ourselves a break. It's okay. We're not going to do wellness perfectly. That's okay.
Exactly.
But I hear that feedback from women when I try to teach this stuff, is they're like, I'm doing this so badly. I'm like, why are you being hard on yourself for being hard on yourself? No, 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 no.
Right, right.
So it's okay. It's a process and we'll get there.
What were your boundary issues?
Oh yeah. I mean, I put that all in the book too. I mean, it's essentially no separation between work and home. What's difficult for in the healthcare field, and I think it may be amplified even for physicians, is that the expectation actually as a student and a trainee is that you are on 24/7.
Yeah.
And that if you were, I mean, I think I even shared, and I really was one of these people, I would come in early, I would stay late. I mean, like I would come in like 5 a.m., I would leave 10, 11, 12 at night. I would come in on weekends. I would come on my days off. I would come in on checking on patients I came in Thanksgiving. I mean, who doesn't come in on Thanksgiving or Christmas to check in on a patient who's lonely in the hospital, which to me was very meaningful.
Yeah.
But like clearly no boundaries. But that was encouraged during all those years of training.
Yeah.
Whether it was overt or just sort of subtly shared, you know, it wasn't necessarily spoken, but you kind of saw other people doing it.
Right.
So you feel like too.
But so, if you know that about yourself, that you have, you know, boundary issues, but you decide to make, you know, that choice, that's another boundary, right? I mean, you decide, I am going to be going out of my way while I'm, you know, at this point in my career to make sure that I, you know, go over and above for holidays or for whatever, right?
Well, and I think ultimately to me, I don't want to, and I that's why a lot of things I put in the book are suggestions, you know, because I don't want to be saying you must live like this, because that's what it's my opinion, but like, I don't want to put that on anyone else. Like, ultimately what I want is for, I mean, each of us have to choose. I just want each of us to be able to choose the life we want. And if we're choosing that, that's great. You know, I think ultimately it's okay. Like if that's what you want and how you want to be, and you feel like that's the right thing for you and it's aligned with your core values, your why, and it actually brings you energy, that's okay.
Right.
You know,
that's a big part of it. If the joy is in there,
maybe that's the difference.
Right.
You know, I'm curious how you do, because you have, oh my goodness, you do so much. And
yeah,
you're adding more, you're going to do like live panels and events, right? Or something.
Yeah.
Really cool.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I do a lot of external things. I have scaled back my practice a little bit in the process. It's been a little busier this year with everything that's going on, trying to keep up with everyone. But yeah, I, you know, one of the things I try to do is kind of give, you know, both my family and my clientele a sense of like, you know, when I'm really busy, and this is a boundary that I set, is like, you know, they get to realize that I will definitely get back to them. And if it's an emergency and they really need a referral, if they need, you know, cause I'm not an emergency care type person, but that I will make sure that they get a contact. But you know, if it's somebody that I've been working with for a while and they're trying to schedule something for the future, I might take it in the order in which I feel like in priority that I need to get back to it, depending on how busy I am. And I'm pretty good about getting back to things. But, you know, we can do this same thing with our family sometimes. Like, we can't immediately respond to a text and take us out of our flow of the things that we're trying to accomplish either. So those are boundaries that we can set. And if people get upset, sometimes there is a difficult conversation that needs to be had to let them know that, you know, this is my boundary.
It's also probably helping them too, because that other person may or may not be super familiar with the concept of boundaries.
And probably not.
Probably not. And it might actually help them have a more joyful life too.
Yeah,
so
true.
I view it as like, you know, to do it in a gentle and loving way. It's never like, this is why I bring up, when I talk about boundaries, I try to encourage a more gentle way of thinking about it rather than like, no, I'm not doing that. I'm like, well, that never gets you anywhere. Like, if you act like that with another person, they're going to push back. And so, and that's partly why. And I also feel that it takes up energy to constantly be saying no, right? Like that in itself to me is a drain. And I think it is for a lot of people who struggle with this. So, so to just to view it as like out of love for you, another person, you know, let's take a break. Let's, you know, I want you to have this time for yourself. I'm going to do this. You know, set the expectations in a clear and a kind, compassionate way. It goes a long ways. I have yet to have it not go, like, it doesn't always go perfectly, but it definitely, it just ruined, like, make the relationship more difficult.
It took
just
me,
builds more trust.
It took me having kids to really get good about boundaries, I think, both because I wanted to focus on them. And then as they got older, learning how to, you know, kids do really well with boundaries. You know, that's one of those things that if they don't have boundaries, usually it's one of those things that really, you know, hurts them long term because they start expecting all these different things. But that's one thing that I've come to identify. And now, Mike, I have one in college now. So as they get older, it's like a whole different set of boundaries, but the rules basically are the same. And like you're saying, I think it is about sort of, you know, with love, being able to explain to them why this is being set and that, you know, you're doing it not out of selfishness, but for both of you. And sometimes just to help them understand, which they can do when they're older, what, you know, what your day-to-day looks like and why you're actually, you know, making these boundaries.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's actually, so my dad is a almost retired allergist in the Portland area. He's almost like 78, 79, and not fully retired yet. But it's really sweet because he is now, of course, like my main fan of all the stuff I do. And, he once downloaded the little boundaries workbook I made, and he was like, "What is this boundary stuff that you keep talking about?" I'm like, "Oh, it's really good. Let's work on this." And he's like, "Oh, interesting. It's just really cute." Like, we can learn at any age, you know, even though it wasn't necessarily something we learned as kids. But I mean, that's wonderful to actually see that as, because I actually think in our family, I don't know if we model boundaries very well. Like, there's text messaging at all hours of the day. So I don't know.
One of the things that you were suggesting within the book was kind of looking at how we chart out, you know, take a week and sort of look at what the whole week looks like in terms of all these different pieces that you're going to need for time, you know, whether it's commuting to work, you know, exercising, the work itself, any hobbies you might have, all these, how much time you spend looking at social media, whatever. It's all those kinds of things. And I think it might help us to really sort of understand even where we're being kind of not as good as we could with our own boundaries.
Yeah, I think it's actually one of those important things. There's something about just, I think, writing things down or typing them. We type a lot now, or even just seeing it, right? Like, if I actually have people, and I do it myself, I have my calendar, my thing over there with all my colors. But I mean, I even have people color code it because it's actually kind of visually easy to see what you're kind of doing. And the reality is most people find that stuff we're doing kind of bleeds into everything else. And that is when we're not really intentionally setting boundaries. Because the reality is, I mean, that's how work seeps into everything. That's how email, social media, all the whatever. There's many demands on our time now, right? And so unless we intentionally block it out, it's actually, it can be easy for it just kind of be all the time, which is what people struggle with. So I find that even just forcing I do it to myself every few months, just forcing myself to like log what I'm actually doing. And I'm like, oh, I could be a lot more efficient, first of all. And I might actually be happier if I'm not doing email 8 hours a day, like maybe only 30 minutes. And that kind of stuff actually is really important when I work with physicians who have very, and honestly, a lot of professionals who have very like packed schedules. Right. Like if you've got a clinic schedule and you've got 20, I mean, the reality, most physicians these days, primary care physicians see 20, 25 patients a day. They've got maybe 10 to 15 minutes per patient. I mean, that's like barely any time to say hello and examine a patient, let alone all the charting, all the stuff. So like, there's just so many demands, the reality of healthcare today on people who work for large systems. And so like how they manage their time during that day is really important too. So that's, I actually find that really helpful in that perspective too.
Yeah. Because going back to what we were saying earlier, you know, in terms of energy being everything, it's sort of about, you know, energy for, you know, for what, and looking at the, you know, getting back to the why part too. It's like, you know, which of these things really relate to my why and which of these things can be spent less time on and that kind of thing. I don't necessarily do this stuff like, you know, that often, but I've been through these exercises enough times that when I do feel like I'm sort of getting off track, or I just feel like, I don't know, like there are just moments where you're like, I'm not feeling excited about either, you know, my work or about my life or whatever it is, looking at these things and saying, what am I not probably putting enough time into? And once you've done it enough times, you can almost just go back through your charts and say, okay, well, there it is.
Well, I was actually having this great conversation with my coach yesterday, and I was not an athlete, but she was years ago. And she was like, you know, when you have a really tough game and it's like you're destroyed, right? And then what do the coaches do the next day? They're like, we're going back to the basics. Yeah. We're just going to do the basics.
Exactly.
And I think it's the basics. This is why I think it's so important for, I mean, I think it's important for every human being, but I look at physicians and unfortunately we don't learn about core values or why or purpose or any of this stuff to provide a framework for how to even begin to think about the basics. Yeah. I can't tell you, I mean, I coach providers at work too. I mean, men and women, I have dozens and dozens, and most have not heard of this before. Mm-hmm. I mean, many are in their 50s and 60s. So even knowing that there isn't even a basics to go back to for most of them, and they've been in training for so long. So that's a big thing I'm super passionate about, is getting this into the lives of our medical professionals early. You know, I think it should start in college, med school, residency.
Or earlier. I mean, I've been trying to get in, and, you know, because I've treated newborns, And some parents have just kind of decided to keep their kids coming to me, you know, sometimes, you know, twice a year, 3-4 times a year, whatever, to kind of keep these check-ins. And the nice thing is I feel like I can keep educating them as they get older, you know. And so my oldest, actually I just had dinner with a couple of friends whose babies I treated who are now 12 and 14. And having dinner with them, I had a real moment of like, oh, look at all these, you know, this beautiful family who, you know, have all, you know, I've been connected to through this whole process. And I think, you know, back to the basics, sometimes when I feel like I'm struggling, and I talk to my clients about this a lot of times, you know, personally, I kind of go back to, what's my sleep situation look like? How well am I eating? What's my, you know, self-care and exercise look like? But then also, you know, more interpersonal. What are my relationships like? Am I spending enough time with those close people who make me feel good? You know, am I spending enough time with my kids and my wife and my mom and all these things, right? So
important things.
Although that's kind of, for me, that's always the basics. So, you know, similar to the other chart, I feel like that's a very kind of basic thing to go back to.
It's not hard. I think we all kind of know it, right?
But when we get in a spin,
we just, it goes out the window. Yeah. I think it's human, you know, it's okay. I one of my favorite phrases to teach people is to say, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's all right. You're doing the best you can. It's okay.
I do similar, you know, when I get people who feel like, oh, I was on a good track and I kind of fell off of it. The thing I say is like, you know, with the next day or with the next meal or whatever it is that they're really struggling with, because, you know, we're gonna make these mistakes, or we're gonna have a series of mistakes, and then you just have to start again. You know, and it doesn't necessarily mean we're starting back at the beginning. Mm-mm. It just means we're kind of refocusing. And it's one of the things that I've always felt with meditation was for me anyways, meditation is kind of about, it's not about some, you know, achieving some enlightened place necessarily, but. The enlightenment that might happen, I think, happens in terms of like being able to see what your mindset is. And you kind of talk about this a little in the book of, you know, that's that just sometimes giving yourself the space to actually get back there. And even as another basic, I think that could be one of those things that people can kind of tap into too.
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm so grateful that there seems to be much more knowledge about and acceptance of mindfulness too. I'm trying to remember when I started. I mean, I've been meditating since I was in high school. And so I was really lucky I was introduced early, because I used to do a lot of piano performance. And so we do a lot of visualization. But otherwise, I would have probably not encountered it, I think, for years. I don't know when I would have learned about it. But I'm so grateful, because it's powerful stuff. And it makes all the difference in our lives. So
you still play?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm a musician.
Not enough.
I'm a musician too. Yeah.
Oh, what kind of music do you play?
I mean, I play rock and blues and all sorts of stuff. I picked up the drums at 45 too. So I keep adding new things. But it is part in terms of my my mindfulness or a way of sort of like creating some separation, another boundary. Right. It kind of takes me out of whatever my mind state was for a period of time and gives me that little break. And a lot of times after I'm done, I almost kind of feel cleansed of all that stuff and I can get back to things.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's that kind of, it almost feels like, at least for me, I have much more energy afterward.
Me too.
And I find it recharging. And I do classical music. I always wish I could do rock and jazz. And I just know how to do classical music.
You can. It's easy.
That's all I know.
All you got to know is chords. So you'll be easy for you.
I can do some chords, but not cool chords. They're just like the basic. And I can like read music, but I can't make stuff up. But here's my inner critic. I'm like, I probably can come up with something, but whatever. It's okay.
You've got more skill than me, probably.
Oh my gosh. I actually always wanted to learn the drums, so I think there's still time for me. My parents said no, and I always wanted to learn, so maybe I should just do it.
It's so fun.
It does look really like so much fun. Yeah. Well, this is the kind of stuff, this is why I would say the vast majority of women physicians, to come back to this whole boundaries idea, is like, they don't have this joy of, I would love to play the drums, or playing the piano brings me energy. I mean, this is like not part of their lives. I mean, right. They're just like on, and that's why they're so burnt out. Yeah. So I mean, like, if to be able to laugh and, you know, think about, oh, that would be really fun to learn that. I mean, I think honestly, the vast majority of women I know are just trying to survive.
I know.
So it's, they can't even get to that. And that, it's, and I was that way too, not that long ago, like 3 years ago. So yeah. I understand completely.
I talk to some of my, especially when I'm working with therapists, one of the things I've identified is that because therapists have to kind of hold their tongue a lot, or they have to be very careful about the things that they say to people. One of the things, I took some voice lessons at one point for like 3 years. I'm not a very good singer, but one of the things that I learned from that is that it was kind of an avenue of expression challenge for me too. And so when I see it with therapists now, one of my things that I have them do is I have them, you know, sing, you know, and even if they feel like they're not a good singer, a lot of times I find that they really like singing already. And if that's the case, like, find the space for it, whether it's in your car or whatever, and really open that up and just, you know, express or emote as much as you can through that. And what I get back from that is that it's one of the best forms of therapy that they have. So, you know, if we feel like we don't have time for these kinds of things, that's something simple that just about everybody can do, or they might already be doing.
Well, it's the most natural form of expression for human beings.
Right.
My mom was an opera singer, so I was really lucky to. So, and I don't sing like that, but I think it's, there's something very therapeutic of just letting something out. Yeah. And I could see that, especially for therapists, because, and I feel that way even in my role as an oncologist and as a coach, like I can't say a lot sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what happens when people begin to hold it in. It becomes somatic. Like it becomes, we like
totally.
Even, right. We have to let it out. And, I love that. I might recommend that. I'll give you credit, of course.
Okay.
I'm like, I heard about this really cool idea, which isn't really hard and it's free.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's great.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, this is so fun talking to you. I want to follow you and kind of, you know, pay attention to more of what you're doing. Are you doing anything with social media right now? I know your website is Tammy Chang MD, is that right?
TammyChangMD.com.
And so there's links to like Pink Coat and to, you know, if you're interested in the book or the workbook kind of stuff, and then your consulting work is in there too. But are you going to be posting anything as it relates to the work that you're doing too?
Yeah, right on my website, I've actually got a new, just created a new assessment. So you can actually test how you're doing with your own boundaries and your own burnout. So
okay.
It's like kind of made a meter actually, and there's like resources in there for women. So I want to offer that to everyone. And then of course I'm on Instagram, so it's just Tammy Chang MD.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks so much. This has been really
fun.
Thank you.
Likewise, and I can't, so excited and so grateful to have connected with you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm going to follow you now. So I love everything you're doing.
Oh, thanks. So
thank
nice to
so
meet.
Much. Likewise. Take care.
Dr. Tammy Chang, folks. I put a fair amount of thought into boundaries throughout my adult years, but I think I often focused more on how I was setting boundaries to prevent others from exerting unwanted influence on my life. And since this conversation, I've given a lot more thought to how it's also a framework for defining our core values and staying on track with them, and how getting clear about this really frees up the mind to live more presently day to day in what we are setting out to accomplish, and how this can also just take us out of that achievement-based mindset to one that's more purpose-driven. If you're in healthcare and looking for some guidance from Tammy, check out her website, TammyChangMD.com, for links to Pink Code MD and her book, Boundaries for Women Physicians, Love Your Life and Your Career in Medicine. And if you love the resource that you get here at Highwood Health, consider becoming a health amplifier today. While this project is a labor of love, it requires funding if we want to continue to build and stay true to this mission. You may have noticed we have no annoying ads and are not bound by corporate interests, but that means we do need your support, which you can provide for the price of a cup of coffee once a month by going to patreon.com/highwaytohealth. Your donation is making this quality resource available to anyone in need. Thanks for listening and for all that you do. Be good to yourself, be kind to each other, and take care of your planet. Be well, my friends.
If you enjoyed podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Nurse Wellness Podcast, hosted by Wendy Garvin Mayo, focuses on the power of stress management and how it's foundational to being your best, doing your best, and giving your best. There's a wonderful episode that you should check out called Letting Go, where Wendy Garvin Mayo shares 6 strategies to release control and manage stress effectively. Check out Nurse Wellness Podcast on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.